Welcome to Film Corner.
Yes, indeed.
Now, before we go any further, I'm invoking the Film Corner protocol.
Okay.
Which says that a full public inquiry can be called for in cases where one of the beans picks a film so shit that I'm not sure we're going to even fill 20 minutes with this one.
Okay. I think you underestimate how angry for how long I can get.
Okay. Well, shall we?
But I do feel like what the public inquiry needs to look at is not just the effect on the victims, which is, of course, very important. We must put the victims first, of course.
We've got to do that.
Yeah. And we must also learn lessons for the future, of course.
Yeah.
But I think part of that is there needs to be a forensic look at how we got to this point, who is responsible, and what should happen to them.
Yeah. And is there actually a cultural problem here? Is it institutional, what we're dealing with?
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I'm just pleased that we're living in an era where accountability is vanishingly rare, and what you need to do really is just style things out.
Interesting.
Yeah, because the news cycle will move on, won't it? That's what Mike's depending on today. Is that he's going to suck it up while it lasts, but he knows the news cycle will move on.
Brazen it out.
It's the only way.
Yeah. It's the autocrat's playbook.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Now, I actually didn't know whose choice this was.
Mm.
So I actually need this to happen because I actually don't know.
Okay, well, okay. So before... Okay,
because I thought it was Henry.
whoa. Okay. this is why we need a tribunal. You can't expect to sort these things out in a casual conversation, Ben. Why do you think tribunals were invented? And why do you think the sacred desk setup of a tribunal is so... Yeah. So,
and why do you think you can hear me shredding my WhatsApps in the background
with your digi shredder? Yeah. I thought it was a scam when you bought that, but it turns out it's really come in handy.
I print them out and then I photograph them and then I send them to you and I call them WhatsApp. That's
right.
How I do WhatsApp.
And I shred them. So yeah, if you put something through a digi shredder, the ones and zeros just become like little half ones and little semi.
Little U's.
No. Whoa, everyone. Hold your horses. Okay. I think that the WhatsApp history has obviously been scrubbed.
Yeah. Can I use the phrase truth and reconciliation committee?
Well, you struggle to. So I'm going to say no.
Okay, let's give some context, shall we? Because it may well be in the title for this episode. And I should say early doors, because people have made this mistake before, where they feel that they have to have listened to the... It may be too late for some people. Some people feel they have to have watched the film to listen to the episode. You don't have to do that. And there will be spoilers. There's all that usual thing. We're talking about the Ealing comedy, The Titfield Thunderbolt. 1953 now, British movie.
Yeah. Which is on iPlayer currently.
Which is on iPlayer. Now,
Henry, was that you getting a text from your legal counsel?
Yes.
To say nothing. Henry is just going to say no comment from this point on.
They're saying, Henry, you can't represent yourself. A jury are going to hate you, they're saying.
I will admit that I did suggest it. And should I say why? I mean, that's...
Well, before you do that, Mike, I think you should say why. Mm. But I just want to be a bit more forensic about this because I've just found the WhatsApps. I know you did shred them, but I've still got a copy of them.
Oh, so, damn.
Yeah.
So we're talking about how we have to do a Film Corner episode, or we'd like to do one. And Mike says this. Mm. Okay, so there's a new film on Amazon, which is amazingly, it's presented by Hyundai. It's called Our Fault, and it looks impossibly shit.
Yeah. It's Our Fault, presented by Hyundai. That's, I thought, amazing. That was quite beans on trend. I've never seen anything like that before.
Might have been good. Further Film Corner suggestions.
Mm.
For something less painful to watch, but might be fun to talk about, is The Sum of All Fears on iPlayer.
I was very disappointed that I didn't get any traction.
Yeah, I was up for that. I might have been up for that. I considered that.
I don't think I've actually
ever seen it.
It's a Clancy Affleck. It's basically a bomb goes off.
Why didn't we watch that? I know. I saw that one and I thought, I've never actually seen that either. It looks like a classic
Oh, it's good.
So it's early noughties.
Sort of.
Yeah. Less successful than the other Clancy type adaptations, I think, because, you know, the bomb does literally go off.
Well, I've got a friend who I think told me that he thinks it's the greatest film of all time.
Oh, well, no. Okay, we'll chalk it up. Maybe it'll come in. It could come in. I mean, I'm still up for it in for future film corners.
Okay,
I'm assuming that the format point survives today.
Interesting.
I'm looking at the poster. The Sunball Fizz looks bloody good. Morgan Freeman and Ben Affleck are looking out of the poster.
Yeah.
Which is almost always the choice with posters. It's very rare you get them looking in. But they're both looking straight out at the viewer.
Yeah.
And Ben Affleck, if you look at it, Ben Affleck's face is so close behind Morgan Freeman's, it's actually not possible.
I think Ben Affleck is playing that, is it Jack Ryan? It's the Jack Ryan character. It's one of the many iterations right. of Jack Ryan.
But he would have had to have scooped out the back of Morgan Freeman's head to get that close behind him.
Yeah, and that's what it takes, guys. Okay? If you want to make
it big. On the poster is no less than about 30 nuclear warheads. Why are we watching this film?
Yeah, it would have been brilliant. You'd have really enjoyed it.
And also, the sum of all fears. Think about it. That's got to be loads of fears, right? I mean, the amount of fear that's... You know what I mean? Like, the stakes couldn't be higher if it's literally all fears added together. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah. So one of those bombs is just full of, like, quite big spiders, for example.
There's quite big spiders. There's your mother-in-law coming around unannounced.
Yeah. One of the bombs contains a man dropping a freshly baked lasagna. just as his guests arrive.
Yeah. Also, another one's actually got your father-in-law coming around unannounced, by the way, actually.
He's got his own key. And they're in the middle of a Wednesday afternoon lovemaking session.
Yeah. But actually, he is going to sort out that squeaky door of yours, isn't he?
So. I'm just going to put a little bit of WD-40 on that hinge on the door and a little bit more on your knob. Thanks, dad-in-law.
But we didn't go that way.
We didn't.
No, so then Mike continues. iPlayer also has an Ealing classic on at the Mo, the Titfield Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Mike's thrown a lot of, he's thrown a lot at the wall there.
Yeah. Then Henry says, I'm on the run. Mm-hmm. We'll have a think too. So I think that, by that you mean that you're just...
It's cartels. It's the usual cartel stuff. The Sinaloa boys, they really do hold a grudge, it turns out.
They don't believe in a cooling off period.
They really don't. So then also, most people say count to 10 and you'd be okay. With the Sinaloa boys, you've got to push that up to at least 15. Yeah. So I had a lot going on at that point.
So then, Mike, I guess he hasn't had any specific positive sort of reinforcement for any of those ideas. So he comes back with more ideas.
Yeah.
It's pathetic, to be honest.
It really is. Can I say, this will be one bit in the tribunal where Mike's really crawling up his own arse with embarrassment. The amount of films he's thrown into the suggestion WhatsApp. I mean, it's clearly a man who's on the edge.
I mean, this is the moment where he starts thinking about maybe doing that, what was it, that Serbian warlord thing where you just take the poison in the tribunal.
What, in the middle of the tribunal?
Yeah.
Also, by the way, can I say Christopher Nolan at this point shuffles out of the tribunal quietly, trying to not draw attention to himself because he realises he can't turn this tribunal into a good film. It's just the whole thing.
It's
just
dead
awkward.
On arrival.
It's dead on arrival, this one. Because he is looking for his next big tribunal picture, of course.
So Mike writes, more Film Corner. Newest Amazon originals includes Play Dirty, brackets Mark Wahlberg, and Pick Up, brackets Eddie Murphy, both of which look like quite hard work, but might be chat fuel.
I mean, he's covering his bases so much. I mean, he's covering his bases so high, the bloody baseball stadium's going to have to be shut down because they're not usable. Is that the kind of bases it means in that phrase?
I don't think so, but I like the way you've cross-pollinated the two ideas. And that's art.
So you had heists, you had nuclear thriller.
Yeah. I mean, it's jumpers for goalposts, but the amount of jumpers on the pitch is like, what the fuck is this? Some sort of jumper labyrinth? It's not even football.
That was very much fruit of the poison tree, I think, there, Henry. Your starting point, you started with the wrong idiom.
Yeah. It is fruit of the poison tree, right? But I do love fruit of the poison tree. What is wrong with me? I keep on going back to it. Maybe this pomelo... won't give me the squits. Every time.
Then Mike writes, oh, there's John Candy, I Like Me, which looks quite good, but might be harder to be funny about. So I think that's a documentary about John Candy, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a terrible idea for a film corner.
Okay.
Yeah. Good film. It sounds like I'd be interested in watching it, but...
Yeah. It'll be a 20-second episode of... Yeah. I really enjoyed that. Me too.
Don't. Mike has thrown his net so wide that he's got surfers in there. He's got people that have just gone for a walk by the seaside. Do you know what I mean?
I've put my head above the parapet, but I've put it above the parapet so you can see it from north, south, east and west. Do you know what I mean? I'm absolutely asking for it from a trebuchet or a crossbow. And
his net's so wide that it's actually... It's gone into the baseball stadium, isn't it, Henry?
It's hooked up all those things he'd cover the baseball. We can now see the bases again.
No one's getting their jumpers back, are they?
They're not getting jumpers back.
Be furious because those jumpers are...
They're all soggy.
Jumper. Yeah.
Okay.
But then this is the thing that I wanted to talk about today.
I think there's a spread of culpability coming up.
Well, here we go.
Yes.
So Henry quote tweets or quote sort of...
Yes, I do the bit where Mike is basically, he's done what Trump does. He's trying to flood the system with information. He's just flooding it, suggestion after suggestion after suggestion. There's no way he's going to be culpable for anything. That's what he thinks. He thinks his ass is clean. If you've got enough shit on your ass, people can't see your ass. They don't know how it's going to be. You know, you've got an ass.
It's not a coherent policy sort of offer, is it? It's all over the place.
It's all over the place. And you know that Stephen Witkoff is just licking his lips in the background.
I think at which point dung-strewn lips.
Dung-strewn lips.
I think Henry tries to wrestle some order out of this chaos.
Yeah.
And
so
he
I reply to the specific
one about the Ealing comedies and some of all fears, and he writes these words. Yes. And please listen to them.
The whole tribunal is going to hinge on this moment, isn't it?
Yeah. Christopher Nolan ambles back in. Maybe this could be a big movie.
This could be it.
Mike puts down the poison.
Yeah.
And Henry writes.
The rat that picks it up.
The poison tangerine. The tangerine full of rat poison.
Oh, God.
Henry writes. I quite fancy Titfield Thunderbolt.
There we go.
No!
Flash, flash, flash. Camera's going off left, right, and centre.
My client has no further comment. Henry, that's just you talking in an American accent.
Cues of the payphone for the press corps have just got there around the block. The screaming and wailing. People are fainting. People are being sick.
I'm going to have to use my subterranean drill device to drill down towards the Earth's core.
Yeah, the assassination's called off. He was in the sights. There's no point in putting a bullet through Henry's head at any point. It's over for him, right?
Because if there's one thing in prison that they hate more than nonces... It's people that suggest a Titfield Thunderbolt. I will get absolutely...
A special wing just for those guys.
I'll be shanked before I've gone through given them my sort of items to look after until I come out again. I'll be shanked during that
shanked
bit.
Pre-flea powder.
It'll just be wasting flea powder on him at this point, honestly. Just get him shanked. And I can't take the flea powder home and use it to treat some of my wife's fleas.
I sentence you to 15 years good shanking. Okay.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So to be fair to Henry, then, in your defence, your defence lawyer might say, you did write after I quite fancy Titfield Thunderbolt, you wrote open to both. So the door is still open. But then who slams the door?
Open to both. What's the other one?
Some of all fears.
Oh, so I put that in. So I did. Yeah. You see, I think at an institutional level, there is a sort of culture of trying to evade culpability. You know what I mean? Because I'm not zeroing down on a choice. I basically, part of me fears that this tribunal is going to come.
Mm. Yeah.
That's why I've written that.
You're denouncing all of your neighbours and your family ahead
exactly,
of time.
Exactly, just doing it in advance.
Just trying to throw them to in front of the... front of the inquiry.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so the door is still left open by Henry, who writes open to both. Fair enough. So let's have a look at who slams that door shut.
Mm.
Benjamin Partridge writes, let's Titsfield.
There it is.
The man who brought the tribunal, the chief inquisitor of the tribunal itself. This is why the table arrangement of the tribunal is so crucial.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Because it's rectangular.
Stacked. It's got to be stacked.
It's got to be stacked. But Ben... We can now swap the tribunal, essentially.
We've got to kick the legs out of the bottom table.
And now you're the one being tribunaled.
Mm.
Isn't this teaching us that we all have equal culpability?
Yes, maybe
we're
it is
understanding
actually,
how these things happen, how these extreme movements take hold and sweep a nation, aren't we? You know, none of us really are immune to it.
You know what? In a weird way, this is a bit like to invoke a much better train movie. It's a bit like Murder on the Orient Express, isn't it? Spoiler alert.
What is?
In that all been culpable. We've all stabbed ourselves in the neck.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
So for the next stage of the tribunal, we're now leaving The Hague, where we were, and there's a new one. It's in Yalta. It's where they had the Yalta conference.
Okay, Tri-Nation. So we get the Soviets are getting involved now, are they?
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got Stalin, Roosevelt, Churchill. Okay, they're going to carve up
the big boys,
the future of podcasting.
Just quickly, I'm assuming that there'd be at least like a cold sandwich spread or something at this point. Is there?
At the conference?
Yeah, because we've had a whole morning of tribunal.
I shouldn't have thought so. No.
Is it? You've got to sort yourself out, sort of thing.
Have you brought change with a vending machine? That's been cleared out by the press corps and various family members hours ago.
There's nothing left in there.
There's absolutely nothing left at all. There's just one stricken Twix that won't come out, no matter how many coins you put in. It's snagged in the rotating mechanism.
So I think this part of the tribunal needs to focus in now on intention, what Mike intended when he suggested it.
Okay.
And why me and Henry were swept along by it. So let's carry on this. Tribunal. The tribunal opens.
Okay. Well, intention. I'm sure many of you do know, because it's a classic. But for those who don't know, there was a series of British movies called the Ealing Comedies, made in the Ealing Studios, post-war movies. They include bolt-on classics such as The Lavender Hill Mob, Hue and Cry, Passport to Pimlico.
Whiskey Galore. The Lady Killers, I think.
The Lady Killers, yes, absolutely. Tremendously good films.
Plimpton Sudge Box.
Plimpton Sudge Box. in which a group of young apprentices form a lynch party to push a nonce under a train. That's right.
That's Plimpton Sudge Box, yeah.
Now, I have great affection for these movies. And these movies were like on a rainy afternoon as a kid. I might be permitted to watch one if it was on the telly because it was viewed as sort of classic.
Yeah.
So they were a refuge. And I particularly have fondness for this film has pedigree because it was written, and I had seen this film before, but not since probably childhood, written by T.E.B. Clarke, who wrote quite a few of these and won an Oscar for The Lavender Hill Mob, I think. Mm. I've even got his only novel, Dug It Out, Murder at Buckingham Palace.
That's a bad name for a book.
It's a bad book. So I think it's actually perfectly marketed.
Yeah. And they've nailed it with the front cover.
And it's directed by Charles Crichton,
right,
who again made a lot of... he made possibly The Lady Killers, or was it The Lavender Hill?
I think The Lady Killers actually wasn't an Ealing comedy, now I think of it.
Okay, I think they worked together on the Lavender Hill Mob. He also made, his last one was A Fish Called Wanda, Crichton.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So these guys have, so they've made good stuff.
Yeah.
He also wrote Jurassic Park, right?
Same guy.
Yeah.
He just had a slightly different pen name. He just changed one part of his name, but kept the Crichton bit. So I therefore thought, this must be a good film. It's on iPlayer. It's an Ealing comedy. I loved the Ealing comedies back in the day. You know, here we are, comedians, you know, going back, talking about some of the origin works that would have influenced us directly or indirectly back in the day. I wanted the career of T.E.B. Clarke, I think, when I was a kid, sitting around scribbling.
Like every kid, Mike.
Like
don't
every
say
kid.
That as if that's a special thing. Every kid had a picture of T.E.B. Clarke on their wall.
So that was the intention.
And obviously you had every reason to trust that would pay off because, as you say, it's Michael Crichton. He wrote all those good Ealing comedies. He wrote the Jurassic Park books. And, of course, he was played the robot in Red Dwarf.
Correct. I mean, the back catalogue.
The back catalogue of that
quite
guy.
Extraordinary.
So, Bonjo, let's...
well, Henry, no, hang on.
What?
The next stage of the tribunal now is taking place.
Okay, sorry.
When you wrote the words, I quite fancy Titfield Thunderbolt.
Yes.
Tell me about your intentions behind those words.
What the hell was going through my mind? Okay, so I'll tell you what's going through my mind. There's a few different things. One was I'm quite interested in the Ealing comedies. I saw quite a few of them when I was a kid. I don't remember them very well. I remember seeing, I think, which is the one where they do the thing with the Eiffel Tower and the gold?
Oh, with Alec Guinness.
Yeah. Is that Lavender Hill Mob?
Yes, that's the Lavender Hill Mob. Yeah.
So I remember seeing that as a kid, and that all the stuff to do with the Eiffel Tower just blew my mind. It was so brilliant. And there's all these like school kids or something, and they put the gold into little mini Eiffel Towers.
Yeah.
And that just blew my mind. I thought it was such an amazing idea. And there's a bit where they're running, there's a chase, and they're going up those spiral staircases that go round the legs of the Eiffel Tower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are those real? Or are they in my mind?
That happened in the film.
That happened in the film.
Yeah, they do. So they do always end up in the Eiffel Tower.
And they're running up and down the legs on these like spiral staircases. So that's been in my mind. But generally they've always been films that I thought, oh, I should watch them. The Man with the White Suit. And
that's another one. That's another Alec Guinness, I think.
But yeah, there's, and because they're like really like
the untarnishable cloth.
Yes. Right. Okay. He designs a suit that can't get stained or whatever,
which you could remake today as a swinging attack on fast fashion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, or greaseproof trousers is
as a swinging attack on greaseproof trousers.
They're on my sort of to watch list, a lot of those films.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm not schooled in the Ealing comedies like I should be. So I think part of me, I thought, oh, this is a good chance to get schooled in the Ealing comedies. Also, part of me thought, it just sounds it's quite eccentric sounding. I thought, oh, it might be charming.
Mm-hmm.
And I think actually we'll maybe get onto that if we talk about the film itself. I think one of the offers it makes is this is charming.
Mm-hmm.
Or one of the things it thinks about itself is that it's charming.
Yeah.
But I thought it sounded quite charming, the Titfield Thunderbolt.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of, in my mind, I saw, you know, pillar box, red pillar boxes, phone box, red phone boxes.
Yeah. Red-faced Vickers.
Red-faced Vickers. And all that sort of stuff.
And it wasn't colour. It was a rare Ealing, colour.
That's right.
Ealing.
It's in
Technicolor. The first colour Ealing I read.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we are.
So in terms of
I haven't finished, please, thank you.
Sustained!
I invoke, haven't please finished yet, please, thank you.
The gentleman will not yield.
But also, I think part of me thought, you know what? I know the Ealing comedies matter a lot to Mike, and that Mike cares about them and likes them. And I thought, this would be nice for Mike. Let's give him this one, you know, because I know he likes Ealing comedies a lot. So interesting. That's created a weird mood. I think we break for fudge. Am I allowed to say that?
Stalin's broken out the fudge. So my thinking didn't go any further than this thought. The word Titfield Thunderbolt's quite fun, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
That's it.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't even cognizant of it being a comedy or an old film, really. I was just like, yeah, sounds fine. And I think below that, in a way that I probably wasn't thinking about consciously, but I will have to in future, was a certain amount of trust in Mike Wozniak, which is now gone.
And we have to accept this. For the tribunal to move on, we have to accept that trust has been powdered, vaporised. It's ex-trust. It's not.
And eaten by foxes.
It's not. And eaten by foxes. So, but also, I agree that the Titfield Thunderbolt is quite a good title, but I also think it represents the script sort of definitely nosedives from then on, doesn't it? It's the strongest part of the script is very much that cover page, the Titfield Thunderbolt.
Yeah. Okay.
It peaks there.
So, should we get on to appraising this fine, fine film?
Yes.
I'm going to start, actually, before we do that, I did a bit of reading about kind of how it went down.
Yeah, okay.
And we may as well do that now, seeing as we've all given our opinion of the film, basically.
Okay.
Because I wish I'd read it beforehand, Mike.
Oh, really?
Why?
It was basically, from what I can tell, it was like the first Ealing comedy that everyone thought was shit.
Oh.
The head of the studio thought it was shit and was like, oh, we're going to put this out.
Really?
Yeah, and at the time everyone was like, oh, it's not very good, is it? And in more recent years, it's come to be thought of as a classic, but in that way that it's just because it's old, I think.
It's exactly. Everything does eventually. You wait long enough, it'll be, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I also read a nice thing about how the guy who wrote it, who maybe is the guy that you wanted to be as a child, Mike, hated Train.
Did he?
Well, I was reading someone had written a review, like this is at the time.
Yeah.
They said that the film shows no... I mean, it sounds like the person writing this may have been a Train lover. The film shows no genuine love of trains.
But even though... But the important thing to point out to the listener who may not have done and hopefully won't do, ever do is watch this film, is that it's very much about trains.
Yes.
And it's very train focused. There's loads and loads of shots.
Do we need to give a very brief summary of what it is, like a sort of one minuter?
I think that's a good chat. Maybe do you want to do that, Mike?
Okay. So it's made in 1953. It's set in a tiny, idyllic, bucolic little village, we assume, in sort of outside London or something like that, called Titfield. And their little branch line, the tiny little railway line that exists between them and the big town of Mallingford, is to be shut down. And even the opening shot is of it, like there's a diesel train passing, the future, the now. And then we see the little steam train, the Titfield Thunderbolt. So it's harking back to what wasn't, but they like to think of as a more innocent time. People pootling around, ringing. I mean, the villagers, they're woken up by the steam train and by sort of cockerels summoned to the train. They get on the train, they have a lovely time. It's going to be shut down. There's some venal bus drivers who want to take over the route with their bus. They're concerned their way of life will change. The roads will be rammed with a bus. They're going to take over the railway line themselves. And they do that by asking the man who's really rich in the village to buy it. And he says, yes, done. And then they run it and it's all fine. And they have a few problems. And then the bus drivers try and do some sabotage and that goes wrong. And then it all goes right again.
And eventually they steal the denouement. I think that the Titfield Thunderbolt, is that actually the one they steal at the end?
It's from a museum.
It's from a museum where they hold the original inquiry.
Because the whole film is sort of nostalgia and looking back, isn't it? And then the solution at the end is they steal an even older steam train. Yes. So it's like a really, really early one, 1830s or something.
Their deadline is that a government inspector is coming. Mm. And this is not long after the nationalisation of the railways. Mm.
Is it like an anti-nationalisation piece?
I don't know. They do make some barbed remarks about nationalisation, don't they? And they also, there's one very brief scene quite early on where there's a man who gets a role as a union man. It seems they're not sympathetic to union men. He's made to look like a complete fool.
Yeah, and it's also a man who's got a posh voice putting on a northern accent.
Yes, that's right.
Pretty terrible. So when I first watched it, the opening bit is quite good in a way because it's very, very charming, as Henry alluded to. It's very bucolic. Yeah. I literally wrote down, what is the period? I didn't realise it was 1952 because it feels like an earlier period, right? Because it's all people...
I mean, that's what they're gunning for, isn't it, John? I mean, yeah. This dream of the idyllic forever England. I think it's like what the people who made Amelie want to do for Paris. It's the same kind of like, this is, you know...
But also, I think we should point out...
how it should
be. The idyllic, in inverted commas, world they're presenting, this I found very odd about the film. It's almost entirely middle-aged.
Yes.
Everyone is middle-aged.
Very, very few people are married. And the happier ones are not married.
Okay, right. Well, it's also mainly male. If you thought or think that sort of films and stuff are sort of dominated by white middle-aged men. Mm-hmm. I mean, this film it's the cast as well. Like everyone in the film. It's a world where everyone is a white middle-aged man.
When you see Vitality, it's represented by maybe slightly younger men in cricket whites or boys wearing suits. Basically, waving at trains.
But it's so...
everyone waves at trains all the time. They can't help themselves if a train passes. They run up a hill and they wave at a train.
That's true. There's a lot of weight. So there are some children and young people, but they don't tend to have individual lines.
If a train goes
past, they'll stop playing cricket.
They'll stop they'll go dangerously close to the tracks.
And they'll run dangerously close to the track. And this is what they do. They go, they literally scream. It's quite weird.
And wave their hats.
And wave their hats.
They must have.
Yeah. But I've got to say, I was a little bit taken in by it. Like I was sitting there thinking, like, was this an idyll? Would it have been great to live like this? Or was it like a horrible...
There'd have been no indoor plumbing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and you've got to like wring a goose's neck every morning. And like, it's actually horrible, right?
Oh, it's horrible and stinky and weird. And no one's changing their clothes. They're maybe changing their collar and cuffs once a week for Sunday. Everyone stinks.
But there's this bit where, like, the community, I think it's towards the end, are all, like, arriving to help or to get on the train or something. And they're all going down this country. It's such a weird sight. There's all these middle-aged people in really smart clothes walking down this country lane, and the women are all in heels kind of clanking along.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it creates such a kind of, it's such a narrow piece of, it's such a small amount of people that can see themselves reflected in this film. There's no attempt to, it's just, you're between the age of 40 and 49 and you're white.
You live in a very well-appointed village.
Yeah.
Surrounded by very fertile land.
And all the colours are sort of turned up to the max.
Yeah. And you have your own railway station.
And you have your own railway station.
I was a bit excited to watch this as well, because on the weekend I watched a film from the 40s called, is it called Now Voyager?
Let me look. Oh, you mentioned that the other day, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called Now Voyager.
Yeah.
It's from 1942. Mm-hmm. And I really loved it. And I've been watching quite a lot of sort of black and white films recently, and I like them. And I think what I've realised is I don't really like old films. I like a sort of melodrama, like a high romance. People going,
femme fatales.
Yeah.
Pressing into each other's chests.
Exactly. Yeah. All that business. And a bit, and so much smoking and kind of sort of waifish young women crying into the chest of a man. That's kind of what I want for some reason.
Yeah.
Probably on a train platform if possible.
And when you die, your trilby doesn't fall off, right? There's a bit of dignity going about. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen Brief Encounter?
Yeah, that's the kind of apotheosis of this, right?
Yeah.
So Now Voyager is weirdly very, very similar to Brief Encounter.
Okay.
But it's on a boat instead of on a train.
Okay.
Nice. But I don't know, I really like them for some reason, because I find them very romantic, not just in that sense, but in a kind of wider sense. Mm. Like it's a romance of a time gone past. I don't know, it's just, it's cool.
It stirs your loins, Ben, doesn't it? In quite a deep way.
There is no romance in this film. And often in comedies, they don't feel that they have to have a love strand, which I think, as a child, I really enjoyed, because I couldn't be arsed with it.
I think we've all had similar responses here, because from about 10 minutes into this film, I've spent most of my mental energy was trying to work out what's wrong. What is it that's wrong with this film?
What genre is this film?
What genre is it? What is it?
Yeah.
And one of the, so this middle age, the thing that everyone's middle aged is also part, is also linked to the fact that this film is completely sexless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's no
human emotion of any kind in it, apart from excitement to see a train.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that's right. So but I think in terms of like storytelling and what you need in a film to kind of make you feel that it's about human beings.
Hmm.
I think you basically do need, you just need a love interest almost always. That's why I felt, having watched this.
Couldn't agree less.
Okay,
carry on.
But that's the other thing then, but I think the reason this film...
Mike, surely at the end of The Sum of All Fears, surely...
Ben Affleck gets his end away. Of course I do, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's contractual. That's got nothing to do with the film.
I mean, and also at the end of Die Hard, you know, the ex-wife is there.
Mm.
You know, you need that thread, in, I think, through a film. But so that's the other thing that's weird about the film then, is I thought it feels like this is a kid's film, but just full of middle-aged men. So it's like, it's not it falls between various stools. Because it's this weird film, which kind of, the complete lack of sex and lack of frisson. Kind of makes it feel like it's got this emotional flatness to it, like a kid's film. And actually, the other thing it reminded me a bit of is Thunderbirds. Do you remember Thunderbirds?
Of course.
Just because it's just all these lingering shots of vehicles. And it's like a kid's mentality, which is, there's the man with the big steamroller. I like him, mummy.
It's Sid James.
It's Sid James on a steamroller. And then it's like, oh, here's another man on the funny motorbike. Ha, 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 I like him, mummy. Because you remember, like, the civil servant, everyone kind of gets introduced with their vehicle.
Yes,
the civil servant arrives at the ministry on a funny little fold-up motorbike.
Yeah.
There's all these lingering shots of vehicles, of steam trains and steamrollers and buses. Mm.
Maybe for the contemporary audience, that would have been a quite hard-hitting attack on the anonymous Whitehall mandarins of the day.
Because I felt like this is some sort of, there's some sort of moral system or something attached to these vehicles that we're kind of supposed to be interpreting the people through their vehicles.
Yeah, like we're definitely meant to think that buses are bad for some reason.
That was funny. Or odd.
Yeah, buses are bad, trains are good, particularly the older the train, the better the train, the steam train. Yeah. you know, is better than the diesel train. That's the one that people respect.
So what this thing of it being this caught between a kid's film, it was almost like Narnia. If all the characters in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe were middle-aged men.
Yes.
And there's a guy like called Brian on his hands and he's going, I'm just trying to get through this wardrobe. Oh, sorry. Oh, my back. I haven't actually crouched down like this for years. Sorry. Do you know what I mean?
But I think
it was like a kid's film full of middle-aged men.
Yeah,
weird.
But I think that what I want to say is, like, in what way is this film a comedy? Like, it's an Ealing comedy, right? But there's nothing in it that even a sort of...
There's a comedy pass. They've tried a comedy pass, and you can tell that at some point someone said, this isn't funny anywhere.
Yeah.
So they've done a comedy pass where, like, for example, at the beginning, there's a box that says fragile on it that a man needlessly throws onto the ground. Yeah, in a way that doesn't actually kind of work in the system, in this sort of bucolic idyll that we've been seeing, the people loving and taking care of their train. It doesn't actually make sense. And the other source of comedy is
people being drunk. That's the only thing.
Is people having very serious addiction problems.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's the big joke.
Wanting to be able to drink in a public bar all day. Yeah,
that's a good point, isn't it? That's a sort of go-to, just like the drunk comedy.
Because they've got two of them in it. So there's the character who agrees to pay for the railway on the proviso that he can drink on it all day.
Yes, that's right. And then you have Dan the poacher.
Yes. Who, as an actor, so he's a Welsh actor called Hugh Griffith, who I looked up.
Yeah.
He's got...
Extraordinary looking man.
He's got an Oscar.
What did he get an Oscar for?
I don't know. I need to look it up.
He was a darling of stage and screen, though, wasn't he? He was quite a well-respected...
I was quite impressed that his character wasn't Scottish in the context of this film.
Yes, that's true.
What do you think? I really kept on thinking...
That's true. And clearly he didn't even make him Welsh. He could have easily made him Welsh, but he didn't.
He got Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah.
For Ben-Hur.
Did he really? Who did he play in Ben-Hur?
I don't know.
That's a great fact. I bet you he's done the full Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Back in the day. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there is... The middle-aged men thing is interesting. I mean, perhaps you want me to save this for later, but I think in defence of the film, there is a way in which you can watch the film in which the film does work.
In fast forward, absolutely blind drunk?
No. With the film Gladiator playing on a laptop just in front of it.
It requires one tiny reshoot and one small edit.
Okay.
So the edit is you lose the first 5 minutes of the film and you start at the point where the vicar is reading about railways and he's next to a model of a railway. Just before he's interrupted by his housemaid / concubine, whoever it may be. Right? If you view that this whole film, if instead of getting up and greeting his guests, he gets up and he trips and he dashes his brains on the edge of one of his model trains.
Yeah.
If the whole film is in fact the deathbed visions of a brutally traumatized World War II army chaplain, then it makes sense. The whole thing makes perfect sense. Even down to the last shot of the film, which is his face as he is being received into the kingdom of heaven. Right? The whole film then tracks.
It becomes a fever dream.
It becomes a fever dream in which people are placed, his fantasy is his source of retreat.
Yes.
Which is trains, but he's seeing, like, the Sid James character is probably, you know, he's comforted young men on the battlefront. Sid James, I think, he's a soldier that he had gave pastoral care to. He witnessed commit a war crime only to then perhaps save a young French woman from a Nazi sniper, and that's the sort of love interest. That's his story within it.
Yes.
You know, the squire is an officer who perhaps the chaplain had amorous feelings for, was able to express it.
Of course, he's been let down by his country, hasn't he?
He's been let down by his country. The drunk businessman is the vicar's father, who himself traumatized by the Great War and turned to drink. You see what I mean?
Yes.
And then the arrival of the incongruous arrival of the bishop, who's an expert in trains. Yeah. Who's that? It's God.
I think, Mike, that the lengths you've gone to make this film make sense in your own head, the lengths you've had to go to and the amount of subtext you've had to wrestle into it show exactly how shit this film is.
All he's saying is that it needs a complete rewrite. It needs to be completely gutted and rewritten. I think it's a bit simpler. All Ben needs is just some banging to happen. Yeah, I mean, just everyone
needs
bangs.
A bit of banging.
No, I don't want. I want.
Maybe there should be a banging car on the train.
No, I want two.
There's a buffet car, and then there's a banging car.
I want two people that can't bang.
If the whistles are popping, don't come and knock it. But you want them to bang by the end, surely?
No, I want two people who can't bang, and then
because of society's strictures,
exactly. And then they have this very terse scene where they light each other's cigarette. That's as close as they'll ever come.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, is that your fruitcake? Oh, no, it's my fruit. Oh, you've dropped bits of fruitcake down your chest.
Yeah, but is that...
That's one of the subtle moments.
Is that not what you're getting from Dan the poacher shoveling repeatedly and rhythmically coal into the open furnace of the Vickers engine? Is that all you're getting?
But the shovel wasn't phallic enough. The shovel wasn't phallic enough.
He's got
they dropped the ball
he's
again.
He's got a flat-billed cock. This is quite normal at that time because of work accidents.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And of course, because of lack of nutrition, because of rationing. Yeah.
So in Now Voyager, the final scene, he lights her cigarette. He lights his own cigarette. He says something like, maybe one day I could come and visit you. And she says, don't let's ask for the moon. We have the stars. And then the film ends.
Oh, that's a really famous line, isn't it?
I want that kind of thing going on. I want weird, chaste kind of... Yeah,
but Ben, the fact is, you just don't know. We don't know the codification of these stuff. All of those things would have meant specific things. So I think what she said is, "I will give you a hand job, but only if you're grasping my boobs in the way that we talked about earlier." Like, everything has a sexual codification.
Right. And I've got nowhere to hide it, so I will have to toss you off into my uncle's pipe.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's the one. That's the one in my uncle's mouth. Yeah, he is quite hard of seeing. So you're just going to have to live with that. Yeah. Well, it's true. It definitely lacks a dimension because of lack of sex frisson. The film is just it's kind of like a pop up book, but all the pop up bits have been removed.
Well, I wrote in my little notes, I'm looking through I wrote some notes as I read it, as I watched it.
Yeah.
I wrote in big writing, who is this film for?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone know the answer to that?
That's exactly, it's for a child. You know what it's for? It's for a six-year-old boy who unfortunately has gone into a coma and he's woken up and he's 56.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's still got the personality and memories of a six-year-old boy. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a narrow audience.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wrote in big writing, the end was really shit.
So quite coarse notes on the whole.
Yeah.
We're getting.
One of my notes is I've just written Sid James.
Well, it's weird seeing Sid James in something where this must be pre-fame Sid James in a way, because he's not in it very much. It's like,
It's pre-Carry On.
Carry On, yeah.
It's pre-Carry On, but he was already a radio star at that point, wasn't he? He did all that Hancock's Half Hour and all that kind of stuff.
Of course.
Right.
So he would have been a name, absolutely.
He doesn't have much to do in it. I mean, my favourite bit of the whole film was the bit at the beginning where it was just the studio ident, where it's that guy wearing a nappy hitting a gong.
So I've written down that as one of my highlights as well.
Yeah.
The rank gong opening.
Yeah, there's my other highlight bit.
So it's the nearest we got to a sex bit.
Yeah.
So the rank gong opening, the length, 1 hour, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Another thing I did think was quite good about it, there was a lot of very good tweeds on display.
Oh, some lovely jackets.
If you're
jackets.
Into tweed.
Yeah.
And some lovely high trousers.
Very, very high trousers.
Sometimes tied up with bits of old rope rather than belts. Yeah.
And some lovely corduroy trousers, lovely Fair Isle knits. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's some really nice cardigans, knits, corduroys, nice good quality leather boots. Quite enjoyed that in a way.
Okay.
And of course, the whole thing is only 8 years after the end of World War II. Discuss.
Well, I mean, maybe that's the answer to who this is for. I mean, there's another possibility.
Mm-hmm.
There's a conspiracy possibility. So T.B. Clarke, the author, his brother was a big honcho in the army who was in charge of things like... deception operations in the Second World War and commando training.
Right.
So maybe the whole film was some sort of messaging, and it was a signal being sent behind the Iron Curtain.
It was activating a cell in Budapest.
Yeah, because it's uncensorable. there seems nothing malign in it. Do you know what I mean? Beyond the odd barbed mark about nationalisation, that's about it. But even that isn't too heavy-handed. So maybe the whole thing... Yeah, was acting, you know, trying to get a Hungarian revolution going.
I could believe that because it's such a kind of hard film to compute. It makes more sense that it is some sort of it's a secret. Yeah. It's code. It's a weird. It's like a weird magazine, sort of newspaper article that's all just about ham texture. And you're reading it, and you're like, "What? Why is this article? There's like two pages on ham.
Why
texture.
Is this front page?
Why is it front page? And it's obviously it's for a spy somewhere.
And why does this piece about ham texture have the sentence "Storm the Hungarian Parliament" in the middle of it?
And a recipe for gelignite. What's going on?
It did feel a bit like that. So I'm interested. Okay, here's another thought. I still think we're digging away at the same thing. Like, what's going on with this film? So that's one option. It's obviously about nostalgia. It's nostalgia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What? Why? Why? The wars happened. Is it to do with end of empire or like? It feels like. Because it's anti-progress, isn't it? It's anti. So the bus is seen as bad.
Yeah.
It's going back in time. Is it back to a?
It's post-war, but pre-Suez crisis.
Of course.
I can't believe it's taken us this long to invoke the Suez crisis.
But so Britain is still one of the sort of three big powers. It hasn't lost its reputation yet.
Yeah.
Might it have caused the Suez crisis somehow?
You know what? I did actually try and take control of the London Union Canal system briefly after watching it.
Did you? Okay.
So maybe it does. Because you want the opposite of a train, which is a boat, isn't it? It gets you so angry. You're thinking. Here's a thought I had.
Mm.
The moment this film sort of encapsulates for me, it's so like the country is crying out for the Beatles. So hard.
Yeah.
Don't you think? This is like the country is so ready for the fucking Beatles at this point.
Okay. So this is the lid. This film is the lid on the sort of roiling, simmering sexual revolution.
I really think it is. It's a sort of dead, middle-aged, backwards-looking, ultra-conservative.
Yeah.
It's a world with no emotional range. I mean, like, what you might eat a fucking shortcake. That's about as good as life could get. And you know what I mean? Like, there's just no drama. There's no life to it. We just need bloody John, Paul and Ringo to start.
But not George?
Hey, where's George?
I take all leave, George. I take all leave. But the big three need to be. All right, the big two, Ringo and Paul, if I'm going to say it.
Okay, just Ringo.
Just Ringo. The country needs Ringo. Who, ironically, would voice Thomas the Tank Engine, another...
Indeed. Another sort of backwards-looking...
And may well have seen this film as it came out in the cinema.
Yeah.
You know?
But here's the other thing I couldn't work out. Because the nostalgia of it... Is it satirizing something? Is it making fun of the nostalgia? Because it's so shit. What it's yearning for. It's clearly so sort of lifeless and rubbish.
Is it the equivalent in the modern day? And I don't mean to slag off any particular TV programs, but is it the equivalent of the kind of Sunday afternoon tea time drama? Where the whole point is that nothing's really at stake and it's all just a bit jolly. And
but even those will have murder in them.
I don't know what they are.
Well, they will have a murder in them normally, yes.
Yeah.
What, tea time dramas? What are they?
Well, like a Midsummer Murders type thing. Do you know what I mean? Somewhere, where everything is fine and no one's too upset about someone getting offed. Yeah. Someone does get offed. So there's something
cozy.
To do.
But there's, at least there's drama. There's the idea of drama in there. There's some stakes. Because there's some, no stakes in this. Hey, okay, I've got a new theory.
Yeah,
is the moment we're witnessing in this film the beginning of a certain thing to do with British and maybe English identity, which is in the post-imperial Britain has to go from being big fucking mega bastards to this thing, this is very British and maybe too, particularly English, of celebrating how small and quaint and sweet actually we are. We get together and we play cricket on the green and with little sweet, little cute, little Tonka toy people, dooby-dooby-doo, and that's what's so great about us. We're little eccentric, funny little vickers. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Is it that moment? that's happening here, which is this kind of reverse where we celebrate how cute and eccentric and quirky and small, and actually we like the little things, and we like the steam trains and the old ways, and we're just funny little unthreatening little sexless fucking monster freaks.
Well, maybe it is because the makers, they did work in propaganda. Maybe that's what it is. It would have been an awful time. There was still rationing, right? There was still like, if you got ill, probably you were in deep doo doos, you know.
Yeah.
Most people's standard of life would have been horrific, like particularly in those rural settings.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So maybe it's a bit like Passport to Pimlico was all about community getting together. You know, we're all right as long as we rub along together and seek the little pleasures.
Yeah.
Mm.
I feel it's a kind of castrated culture we're watching here that's impotent.
Yes.
You know, that's lost its power and it's lost its young men. It's lost its virility.
Yes.
This is PhD level stuff, Henry.
And it needs John and Ringo.
Yeah. But that's it. It's post-war. The dick literally has been chopped off the nation.
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
The lion is dickless.
The dick that went in the ear of the dickless lion.
And he needs a dick, the exact size and shape of Ringo. He needs a Ringo dick.
Although I have to say, I did enjoy when they sent someone down from the Department of Transport to the village and they had like a village hall event.
Yeah.
Mm. I think this is when it was. He's got the most extraordinary moustache.
Yes, to the point where you would have correctly described them as a set of moustaches.
A sort of fleet.
Yeah,
kind of, it's very much
we're into collective noun territory.
It's collective nouns. Yeah,
because it got me thinking. So that is a 1880s moustache, basically, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But obviously, fashions hang over quite a lot. Mm-hmm. What's the latest time do you think in British history that moustache? Which to describe it is kind of like a full handlebar that kind of goes up at the end, like sort of Kaiser Wilhelm style.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
What's the latest you could get away with that in a civil service job?
Ooh.
But I think we're getting towards the end here, aren't we?
60s, yeah, yeah. I can't see that working past the 50s.
But that's why we're ready for like the 60s and the Beatles and stuff, because those are the old men of empire, right? The guys with those moustaches would have been around when the British Empire was happening.
Has learned his trade as a colonial officer. That's what's happened to him straight after graduating Oxford.
Exactly.
He's been sent off to the colonial service and he's managed a sort of Pacific Island nation somewhere, the Gilbert Islands, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Awfully. And then got a gong and come back.
And also he's got pinstripe because there's a kind of, there's a sort of language of tweeds going on in the film. He's got him and all the government people have pinstripes.
Yeah.
And then the people in the town have these like old tweeds and fair isle knits and stuff. But of course we're ready for tight black trousers, mods,
yeah, mini flares, trousers.
All that stuff, mini trousers. Yeah, Mary Quant's mini trouser. We're ready for Ringo Starr to be sashaying down Carnaby Street with his...
with his tiny trousers.
His bollocks ahoy. Because that's what's weird about the film is it's nostalgia. It feels like it's about nostalgia. They're trying to save something that's gone.
Mm.
But the film itself needs... It's something that needs to go. You know what I mean?
Yes. And it's also, that's the old problem with nostalgia. It's usually there's nostalgia of something that never really existed.
Mm. Yes.
Really.
Well, the other thing I wanted to quickly ask about was, you know, this idea of amateurism. What is that? Because that was in Kapanning, wasn't it? Because this idea that we can drive the train, even though we're not professional, we're amateurs, but we can drive the train.
That's a very Victorian thing, isn't it?
Right, yeah.
Is it?
What is it?
That's the idea where, like, so it would be if you were a gentleman of good stock, it would be very unseemly to have a job, right?
Okay.
But it would be absolutely bang on if you were an amateur historian and a scientist and you did you want to be viewed as a Renaissance man, but not professionally because that's unseemly. Whereas the amateur is doing weird esoteric experiments on trout and at the same time writing a sort of definitive account of King Stephen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. While also working on a half trout, half moth hybrid.
Yes, that's respectability. That's to be celebrated. Rather than the guy who's actually properly trained is doing it for a living.
Yeah. And he'll say, and after dinner and a few cigars and ports. He'll take the gentleman off. The women will go into one room, and the gentleman will go and visit his gallery of freakish trout moths.
Yeah, exactly.
Which are stuffed trouts with moth wings, and also some little moths with trout lips on the front, and various different combinations of trout moth that he's working on. But not getting paid for it.
Absolutely not. No, he doesn't need that.
Because that would be vulgar, wouldn't it, to be paid for it?
That would be vulgar. But because there was a thing with cricket, was amateur and then became professional, and that's a thing about that it lost something if you're a certain kind of person.
Same with rugby as well. It was a big thing.
Yeah, and football, all of it,
But that thing about British amateurism, is that to do with... Is that a sort of slightly right-wing Farage-y thing of like hating experts and stuff?
Isn't it David Cameron's Big Society as well?
Which is what everyone should drive trains for free.
Yeah, basically like sort of
it really helps the state out a bit.
Yeah, public services can be run by volunteers because that's what you sure have so much time on your hands that
and
you
money.
You have time to run a library, for example.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just an odd view of the world that
because you've got enough cash flow because of the trust fund you were set up with at the point of birth.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Right, okay.
Why are you worried about that? Do you know what I mean?
Also, because the bus company is quite vulgarly money making in this film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas they're just some nice people getting together in a, let's face it, between the lines, a zero immigration society.
What a shit film. I just hated it so much.
Yeah. It made me ashamed to be British a few times.
unless
you see it through
the eyes
of a different film
of a dying traumatized veteran chaplain.
Yeah, and then it becomes an avant-garde masterpiece. Yes.
I don't think I don't think Mike deserves any censure beyond maybe a 3 to 5 year custodial sentence for this. So I'm happy to
and the confiscation of my assets
with full shanking privileges.
Full shanking privileges. I think It was unlucky. I think we this was a bit of an Ealing misstep that we managed to.
How long do we have to wait before I can dare to suggest another Ealing experience?
Well, I think your rehabilitation completely relies on the next time we do Film Corner. Mm-hmm. I think we should do Ben Affleck's The Sum of All Fears.
Okay.
And if it turns out to be a good film, then you're back off the naughty step, I think.
Okay. All right.
Is that fair?
But then if it's bad again...
Oh, my God.
Then it's...
I'm prepared to take that risk. Bad is subjective. I'm prepared to take the risk. I think you'll enjoy it.
But if that one's a misstep again, we're going to have to look into reopening French Guiana as a bit... Pima Connolly on French Guiana for Mike, which is going to be very, very complicated and hard to do. But we'll get it done, though.
Will I be the new butterfly? I'll be the new
You might
papillon.
Be the new butterfly. New papillon. That's another film we could watch. Mm.
Okay, well, that's the Titfield Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear from anyone who has watched it and thinks it's good, actually. I'm open to that possibility. It's just not for me.
Yeah, and if there is a... If you're allowed to Zoom from the correctional facility or institution that you're in, then we'd be happy to set up a conversation.
Great stunts, though.
Really?
Great stunts.
If you like model trains.
If you like a shot of a model train.
Plymouth Central.
That's interesting, isn't it?
There isn't any character that goes beyond one dimensionality in terms
it's
of...
It's too easy for Plemons. Plemons would add a nice comic touch to the government inspector, I think.
Yes. But I think what Henry's getting at is that all... Plemons would bring an unwanted second, third, or fourth dimension to any of these characters.
Which would...
It would confuse things deeply.
Yes.
So Plemons probably... I think given all the model trains that are used for the stunts, I think Plemons would have to play the landscape, sounds like.
Yes. He could just lie down and paint different bits of his body different colours.
Yeah.
It's all very bright greens, isn't it?
It's kind of like South Downs. It's gentle rolling English hills, which I think... He has the habitus and skill to pull off.
Good point. I think, Mike, it was filmed outside Bath.
Was it? Makes sense.
Also, can we do a little section that no one's that bothered about, but that I like to call giving credit where it's due to do with credit sequences with Henry Packer.
Okay.
The credit sequence was also shit.
at the end or the one
beginning.
At the opening?
The opening credits.
There's a big circle.
It was one illustration. It didn't change. Yeah. that just went on for about a minute and a half.
Mm. But when it ended really abruptly, and then that came back on. I felt so annoyed and depressed. Mm. I was like, oh, are you doing that again?
What, yeah, really.
The same thing happened at the end as well.
Really abruptly with the beatific face of the padre. That's what I'm telling you. That's when he was received.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. If you can watch the film through Mike's, maybe Mike, you could create a little sort of accompanying package that goes with the film.
Yeah.
We set up in a certain way, whereby which actually kind of improves the film.
Yeah.
If you could monetize that, maybe turn it. Can you do it as a PDF? Do you know how to save something as a PDF?
Because that is where the money is, isn't it? Selling PDFs online.
I see. There must be a YouTube video about it. So I'll look
there
it
will,
up.
There will be.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's the end of the Film Corner. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.
Sorry if you watched it. Please, to God, say you didn't watch it.
Can we actually put out a warning in advance that you don't watch it, but do listen to the episode?
Yeah. Yeah. Do something like that.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.